do want to talk today about one of a very onerous barrier to participation in IIS. And I don't know how many people here are in a state where they have an opt-in system where you have to gather consent on every child that's in your IIS. That is Texas. We do have a law, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, where people are required to actively give consent to be in the system. And in a state the size of Texas, you can imagine how difficult that is. So today we're going to talk about the cost of this consent and can we really afford it, and what are the actual costs involved. So today I'd like to define the consent terms for you, because those in themselves can be kind of difficult to understand. We're going to talk, we're going to have a case study of an opt-in system, which is going to be Texas, and we're going to have a discussion of the costs involved, the financial costs, the costs of re-immunizing, and public health preparedness costs. And then we're going to have a little policy discussion. Okay, so definitions. What is consent or opt-in? That refers to the requirement that all parents actively indicate a willingness to participate in an immunization record data sharing. Okay, so you have to actually say, yes, I want to be part of this system. And then you are opting in or consenting to participation. Opt out or voluntary exclusion means that we will assume that you want to be a part of the system unless you actively tell us that you do not. So this is the system that we use for credit cards. This is the system that we use for telemarketers. This is the system that we use for just about everything else in our lives except IIS. So it's a little curious that this is held to a higher standard in some states than others. Okay, so what was our study design? In order to use some of this data in order to use some of these examples in a legislative policy education project that we wanted to do during the last legislative session, we knew that we had to have some hardcore data, some empirical evidence to show to lawmakers and policymakers what it was actually costing us in terms of the financial burden to the state. So we sent project staff out, and I just want to take one moment here and acknowledge that our project staff went out and actually went out with stopwatches to individual providers' offices and to the offices of MTRAC, and I see some of our MTRAC friends here, and I just want to acknowledge that they were extremely accommodating, and we could not have done this project without them. They were welcomed us into their offices and actually allowed us to stand there with a stopwatch while they did their work, and that must have been pretty distracting, but they were very gracious about it, so thank you, Claude. So we went into all these different places. We went into public clinics, private clinics. We went into providers' offices. We went into birthing hospitals. And we stood there with a stopwatch measuring how long it took for people to do the different parts of this consent process. And then we got salary calculations and materials and overhead and everything, and we put it all together and did an economic analysis of what it actually cost to consent one child from birth through the whole process until they were actually considered consented in the registry. Interestingly enough, in Texas, we found that if a person was approached and asked to consent to the registry, about 96% of the people wanted to be in the registry, had no problem with it. It was a yes. They wanted to consent. But that's assuming that you can get to 100% of the population. And as I said before, Texas is a huge state. We have thousands, millions of children. So in order to get to each child, it takes a huge amount of resources and continual follow-up in order to be able to gather consent on all of these children. So what we recommend is going from a consent system to what we call now voluntary exclusion. We are no longer, notice the change in terminology, we no longer want to call this an opt-out system. Opt-in, opt-out gets real confusing for people. Even, you know, when we're talking to legislators, it gets confusing. Opt-in, opt-out, sometimes you say the wrong thing, then people get more confused. It's very difficult. So we changed our terminology to voluntary exclusion. We want people to feel like they can voluntarily exclude themselves from this system, or they or they can stay in where, you know, they'll be, their information will be recorded and will be accurately kept in a safe place and everything else. So this is the actual law from the Health and Safety Code in Texas. The department, by rule, shall develop guidelines to require the written consent of a parent, managing conservator, or guardian of a patient before any information relating to the patient is included in the registry. So that's what we had to do in order to comply with the rule, was build up all of these safeguards and all of these systems that we could actually track who wanted to be in and who didn't want to be in. So what this turned into, many of you have heard about our Texas two-step. What this turned into in Texas, in order to comply with the rules and the laws, it turned into a Texas 10-step. So in order to get one child consented at birth, we have to go through 10 steps before we can actually say, yes, this child is consented. And I don't know how many of you work in a hospital or have been in clinic settings where it's very fast-paced. People get away from you. People get discharged before you're done with all the paperwork. It's just a very difficult process to go through. I'm not going to go through each one of these steps, but these are all rules and policies and things that we had to put in place just to comply with this consent law. So what did it actually cost in financial terms to consent a child at birth or later on in the provider's office? Well, what we found was, in spite of the incredible efficiency of the MTRAC staff in sorting and going through all of these things, and they really were pretty impressive. They could sort a stack of paper like this in about 30 seconds. It still cost $4.81 per child to consent the cohort that we were looking at. Now, if you did it at the birthing, if you went through that 10-step process during the birthing, at the birthing hospital, during the birthing process, it was only about $1.30 per child. $4.81 comes from factoring in the children who were missed at the birthing hospital or the birthing facility and had to get consented later on at a private provider's office. To consent a child at a private provider's office, it was about $20 per child. So you can imagine all of these kids who were not consented at birth, and there's quite a few because we can't possibly hit everyone, they have to later on get consented at a private physician's office. Well, then it's not just a birth registrar who's consenting them. It's probably an RN or an LVN, and their rate of pay and everything is much higher. So the $4.81 is averaged, and there's a lot of modeling and economic analysis that goes into that, but that is what we can say it costs on average to consent one child to participation in IIS. So you can imagine with a population the size of Texas, this gets to be really big, really fast. 1.7 million was just the ones that were consented that year. It's not the whole population. It's not everybody. If we took that number and multiplied it by all the children 0 to 18 who are not currently consented, it would be millions and millions of dollars in order to get all these kids in. So there's a huge cost to getting a child consented, a huge financial cost to getting a child consented. What we did was we took the process that they did at birth to get the child consented, and we said, well, if we reverse that and just accept exclusions at birth, we can estimate that it would probably cost us about the same amount of money, so about $1.30. And if we take the 4% of children who typically do choose not to be excluded, we've calculated that it would cost us under $20,000 to change to a voluntary exclusion model to actually exempt the kids who didn't want to be in there and leave everybody else in. So it's quite a huge difference in cost, in financial cost. Okay, you can see that we're not the only state who suffers the bane of an opt-in system or a consent system. There are others out there, and you have my condolences. Okay, so we talked about the financial cost of consenting a child. And certainly that's nothing, that's no small thing, but in some legislators' minds in Texas, that was only money. That didn't really speak to all of their concerns. Their attitude was, well, if that's what it costs, that's what it costs, and we're prepared to do that. It wasn't that persuasive to them, interestingly enough. And you would have thought that with many of the fiscal conservatives that we have in Texas, that would have been pretty persuasive. It was not. And so we had to start looking to some of the other arguments about why this was not a good system, what were the other costs that were involved. And turns out that states with an opt-in system, with a consent system, without a voluntary exclusion system, spent a lot more in over-immunizing children. And also there was a cost to our disaster preparedness. The cost of over-immunizing was also not that persuasive, but we're going to talk about that anyway because I think it's a pretty important point. I'll tell you what really did get people's attention was the cost during a public health emergency. So we're going to talk first about the cost of over-immunizing. According to some of the literature that's out there, the cost of fully immunizing one child is about $1,381. The cost of over-immunization is estimated at $26.5 million. This is kind of old data. I understand that there is some newer data coming out. But still, that's a pretty significant cost when you consider the fact that because we have this consent system in Texas, our databases are not as robust as in other places where they have a voluntary exclusion model. And so I don't think that we can ignore the fact that there's probably a lot more over-immunizing going on because people can't track the shots that have already been given. And I did put the picture of the little child getting the shot down there at the bottom. I know that that's not really PC at the NIC, but you know, I don't think that we can also ignore the fact that the poor kid's getting over-immunized. I mean, you know, we've had stories out of Houston where homeless children come into clinics to get immunized, and somebody pulls their records up in one of the IISs, and they've been immunized 3 and 4 times. And, you know, that's not a small thing, and that's not something that people should be subjected to. So I did put in there the little picture of the child getting the shot and not very happy about it because, and it was actually hard to find a shot of a child not very happy about it. there weren't that many of them around, which I thought was interesting. But that's another cost. So, okay, during public health emergencies, it is especially important to have a robust database of immunizations, because not only do you need to know what those kids have had, you need to know what they haven't had, and you need to be able to comply with the emergency recommendations for any immunizations that kids need. And you need to track what you're giving. And you need to have access to those records because of school entry requirements and daycare requirements, and also because, you know, first responders need their shots recorded. So at no time, I think, is it more important to have a strong, robust database than during a public health emergency. And I'm sure most of the people sitting in this room have heard the story of Katrina and what happened in Texas and in Houston in particular. And so... these databases were incredibly important for us in a disaster situation. So if you can deploy a very highly populated immunization system during a public health emergency, it can be deployed immediately at many, many sites across your disaster area and to many points beyond. And you know, you can have this information at your fingertips, but if you have an opt-in system like we do in Texas, it's not going to be as robust. When all of the people came over from Louisiana, they had a pretty robust database because they have a voluntary exclusion system. So they had kids in there, they had adults in there, they had everybody from the public health sector, they had many people from the private sector. It was a very strong, robust database. Could we say the same if the next hurricane hit Houston or Galveston and we had to evacuate to points, you know, far and wide? Probably not. I mean, we do pretty well. We do gather as much as we possibly can. But, you know, our laws and regulations really prohibit us from being as strong as we could be. We do have a law on the books which got passed during the last session that said that during a public health emergency, you do not have to gather consent. We did manage to get that passed. So you can keep that during a public health emergency. But I will tell you that when a public health emergency strikes, it is too late. You need that information there beforehand. And no matter how many times we hit our heads against the wall trying to tell the legislators that it's going to be too late, that was just not what they wanted to hear. You know, the fact that we got a law passed that said that you could actually gather it without consent, that helps. That certainly raises awareness. Hopefully next time we can go back and say, look at this again, please. But it's once when there's a million people running around and you're inundated and your clinics are inundated and you've got clinics going on and you've got disaster relief shelters and everything, it's too late. You need that information there. The only thing that you'll be able to do is track what's been given. You won't be able to see what they already have. So I don't think I can stress that enough. Okay, and the cost of the vaccines that we were able to access, so this goes back to a financial cost. The cost of the vaccines that we were able to access through during a public health emergency through the Louisiana system, in the Houston area alone, we saved about $3 million in vaccine and administration costs. When you look at the vast overall numbers, this is maybe not so impressive, but when you think about this is money that the public health department could spend on other things, it's pretty significant, especially for a medium-sized public health department. Okay, so what are the policy implications? So first and foremost, I just want it, consent is costly. It's costly in many, many ways. It's financially costly. It's costly in over-immunization. It's costly for the public health preparedness efforts. It's a costly system. What we have tried to do is to educate stakeholders, policymakers, and legislators about the different ways that consent is costly. We need to develop policies to address concerns about privacy, because that's what comes up again and again and again and again and again. People are concerned about privacy, and so what that means on a programming side and on a programmatic side and on a software side is we have to listen to them. We have to make the changes that make them feel safe. Some people you are never going to convince. Our financial information is not very well protected. When you bank online, you run some risk. And so there are people out there who choose not to bank online. Does that mean that their banking information is not electronically available? No. It just makes them feel safer. So there are going to be people who will never accept that their information can be accessed over the internet, even if you make it as safe as you possibly can. There are going to be people who are still not comfortable with it. Is their information still electronically submitted to insurance companies? Of course. But for the people who you can reach, it's important to show them in layman's terms what the safeguards are, what privacy policies you have in place, how you are protecting their information, and try to put their minds at ease as much as you can to remove it as a barrier. If you cannot eliminate the consent laws, it's important to at least streamline the process and ease the administrative burden. And this was one thing that we did have some success with our partners from the state during the last session. We were able to make the process more efficient. We did change some language in the code which allowed the state to define what it meant to verify that consent had been received, which meant that we could take that 10-step process and shorten it to about 3 or 4 steps because the administrative burden on them was eased. That's not great. We still have to deal with the consent laws, but at least we managed to make it a little bit easier and a little bit more user-friendly to be able to gather the consent. So in conclusion, consent laws are obstructive and should be eliminated or simplified in order to avoid the fiscal cost, the cost of over-immunization, and the cost to disaster preparedness. Thank you.